I'm James from the Just One More Fix podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual host. Check out all the other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com. And get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
Gamer Public Radio.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Gamer Public Radio. I'm Casey.
I'm Garrett.
And we've got special guest Carla from Weird Giraffe Games with us today.
Hi, I'm Carla from Weird Giraffe Games.
Good to have you with us.
Before we get going to do the quick, Twitter at GPub Radio, Facebook Gamer Public Radio, GamerPublicRadio.com, Gamer Public Radio on Steam, Patreon.com/GamerPublicRadio, and MisAdventuresPodcast.com for our sister podcast. Now that that's out of the way.
Also on Spotify now.
Oh, yes. Also on Spotify now. That was a new thing just as of a few days ago. Unfortunately, with the way Spotify works, we're not going to really get to see stats and see kind of how we're doing over there for about the next month and a half till they finish making some stuff. But it's cool to be there, you know. We're basically as big as Taylor Swift now, I think, is what that means. That's how I understand it. I don't know. I'm sure the check's in the mail. So Carla is with Weird Giraffe Games, and they are a local game dev. Now, for once, it's not video games. I know. Oh, my God. Weird Giraffe Games makes awesome tabletop games. And you've had two successful Kickstarters so far. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
Awesome. That's, like, way above average by, like, two. And you've got another one coming up. Why don't you tell us, before we get into all that, why don't you tell us about you? Like, how did you get into this line of work? How did you get with Weird Giraffe? Like, what's going on there?
Okay, so I started designing games about 2.5 years ago. So I went to Dragon Con, which is this convention in Atlanta. Have you heard of it before?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, so Dragon Con, I was there, and if you've been there recently, like, the crowds are terrible, and you can only get to a certain number of panels during the day, like, so you really have to pick which ones you want to go to, and then you'll have, like, free time, because, you know, you have to stay in line, or, like, go do other things. I was looking at the different panels that were just going on because I had like a free period and, you know, I just wanted to do something. And I saw this panel about how to design your own board game. And I was like, you know, I like board games, so maybe I'll just go to this panel and learn something. And I went to the panel and I don't honestly remember much from it. But one thing that I really remember from it was that they said, you know, just if you have an idea, get some note cards, put it on note cards, and then play it, and you've designed a game. And I was like, whoa, I have note cards, and I have this game idea. And I also had a four-hour drive from Atlanta back here to Huntsville. So during that ride, the people I was with, my husband and two friends, I was like, hey, we have 4 hours. Let's design this game. And we had note cards in the car because, I don't know, we just did. And we started designing.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Who doesn't have note cards or, like, writing utensils? So we started designing this game. And, like, we eventually played it. And it was playable. And I was just so excited because, you know, I went to the panel and they were like, it's easy. Just get note cards. I got note cards. And then I had a game. And I was like, you know, I can make this better. And that was kind of the process for me was, you know, I was just like, I can make this a little better. I can do a little more. And slowly I started reading more articles about what I should do next. And it was like, go get social media. And I learned about Kickstarter, and then about 9 months later, 9 months after I had actually, like, play tested, I went to Kickstarter. So, yeah. And,
So you saw a panel and that was like, hey, anybody can make a game. And you're like, okay, so I can make a game. And then you had two successful Kickstarters. This doesn't sound like real life. Like, that's not how it's supposed to work. Like, you're not supposed to, like, learn anything from those panels. That's not, That's amazing. Like, that is absolutely crazy. Casey went and got a master's degree. Like, all you had to do was go to a panel.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, like, I think one of the things that really told me I could do it, basically, was that there's this kid at the panel. Like, I'm not good at kids. He could have been 5 or he could have been 10. Somewhere in that age range. But, like, he was asking questions about, like, the, like, really, like, in-depth questions about these games he designed. And I think that was part of it, because I was like, hey, this 5 to 10-year-old can do it. Then I must be able to do it as a full-fledged adult. So,
well, and you know, but the all jokes aside, like I'm definitely not trying to write off. Like, obviously, you have talent and you have a lot of drive because, you know, going to just see a panel and then just okay, I'll do it and working and revising and playtesting, like. Maybe without even knowing it, doing all the right things, you know, getting the playtests in and getting all the feedback and going to Kickstarter. It's really just crazy. It's amazing that I'm just mind blown, I guess.
Well, one of the things I'm really good at, like, I am really good at, like, finding out how to learn stuff. Like, if I'm ever like, hey, I wonder how to do this, I just go on Google and I search and I find an article and I find another article, and you know, like, where you just go on the internet and then you know a lot of stuff afterwards. Like, I didn't want to go get my hair cut because that takes a long time and it costs money, so I Googled how to, like, cut my bangs, and I saw a video and I was like, okay, yeah, I can do this. And then I cut my bangs. And so I haven't been back to get my hair cut for like 3 years because I watched a YouTube video.
Sure. So was Stellar Leap the game you designed in that car on the way home from Dragon Con, or at least was that the genesis of it? I mean, or was that an idea that came after?
So Stellar Leap came after. Super Hack Override was my first game, and that game is started off as 25 cards, just that many. And yeah, it was a very small card game. It's like a fast-paced hacker battle about the futuristic year 2000. Yeah, that was the first one.
The box art, by the way, is amazing.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was a local artist, actually, Brian Walker, if you know him. He's an engineer in town who also does art in his spare time.
That's so cool. I'm just at a loss here. Like, this is just such a cool story. Like, I feel like this is a story that you need to get. Oh, crap. Casey, who's the guy we like to watch that makes the great video game documentaries? Oh, no.
I could have told you if you hadn't asked me. Why'd you go and ask me?
Like, I'm thinking of Drew Scanlon, who's doing Cloth Map, and that's not him.
No.
He used to work for GameSpot.
Danny O'Dwyer is his name.
Yes.
And
thank
it
you.
Is, oh, what is the group? What is this group called?
So Danny O'Dwyer does these, like, short form, deep dive documentaries on games. And I want to see, like, the Danny O'Dwyer take on the Carla story. Like, that's what is happening in my head.
Okay.
Anyway, so you have
NoClip. NoClip is his, like, company, I guess, or series, whatever it is.
Which, by the way, if you ever have the free time and you want to see some awesome inside baseball kind of games industry stuff, NoClip, he managed to get Japanese developers at Square Enix to talk candidly, which I didn't think was even legal. You know, like, it's just crazy. So Super Hack Override was the first Kickstarter, followed up by Stellar Leap.
Yep.
And then you've got another one coming, right? Pretty soon.
Yes, it's called Fire in the Library. It's a game of, well, there's a fire in the library, obviously, and you are a brave librarian who is going to go into the library and save a bunch of books, and also, you know, be the bravest librarian that there is, because, you know, that's really the important part, is to, one, to show people that you are very brave and come off as the bravest. If the librarians really cared about the books and such, it'd probably be a co-op game, but it's not. It is distinctly not. It's a quick push.
Now, it says it's a pressure luck game, and I adore pressure luck games. My daughter and I play a lot of, like, zombie dice and stuff like that. You know, King of Tokyo, that's our jam. So I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, I think you'd like it. So the pressure luck element comes from the fact that you have a library bag and you pull cubes out of it, and that emulates running into a library and trying to save a book. So you can pull out, there's five different colors of cubes, and four of them are the different book types, and each book type has a different value associated with it, and the fifth is fire. So if you go in and you pull out a book, you can choose to leave and just score that book, but you can choose to keep going into the library and pulling out cubes. And if you pull out two fires or have a fire in a risky space on your card, then you burn everything. So, which is bad, but if you do burn stuff, that means there's less of that book type left in the world. So that book type becomes more valuable. Huh. So, the game will go on, and like in the beginning, all the books, are between 1 and 4 points each, but towards the end, everything gets up to about 7 points. And so the turns at the end are super, super intense because you're like, well, if I keep on pulling books, I can, you know, get this big head start. But you could also just completely collapse the library. And if you do burn an entire section of the library, the game is just over. Like, if you're on the second turn in a three-player game, the third player just doesn't get a turn because it's done. The library has collapsed.
Yeah. I really like the way this sounds. We will definitely, when it goes live on Kickstarter, please email me again so that we can make sure we send a link out on our social, and because I want to kickstart it.
Definitely.
Because I want the game. But yeah, I would not want to miss it. That is so cool. Now, your website, weirdgiraffegames.net, shows a couple .com. It's a .net on my browser. I'm serious. It's weirdgiraffegames.net.
In a different weird giraffe? Do we have a...
No. I mean, unless they have just... I guess you guys own both
domains. Oh, maybe it could. We actually own like 10 domains. All right, so
weirdgiraffegames.com on the website here. Below Fire in the Library, I see Observance and Drapple. And these say they're both going to be coming to Kickstarter later this year. I've got to say, that seems really ambitious. Definitely not trying to say you can't do it, but so you're hoping to get three games on Kickstarter this year.
So actually I was redesigning my website right before this podcast because things have changed.
Okay.
So our next game is going to be Totemic Rites, and that will be later on this year. And I might have a third game this year. It really depends on how things go. Sure. But yeah, like I want to start getting games faster. Like, the time difference between Super Hack and Stellar Leap was a full year, but the time between Stellar Leap and Fire in the Library was 6 months, or it will be 6 months. So if I could get that time between games down, I could actually start outputting a lot of games, and maybe I could do this full time. Like, if I only did one game a year, like, that definitely would not be a full-time gig at all. But if I could get to 4 games a year, I've done some reading on it, but 4 games a year, they say, is how many to, like, sustain an actual living.
Now, do you feel like you're having to grind these ideas out at all? Or do you kind of just have a whole bunch of stuff in your brain that almost more than you can get on paper? Like, where do you kind of fall there? Do you sit down and decide I'm going to come up with a game idea? Like, what is your method?
Okay, so I have a lot of game ideas. I have too many to actually work on. Like, this is an issue for me. So one thing I make sure to do is I try to write down all my game ideas so that I have, like, just a folder of game ideas. Because you don't want to lose any ideas because, well, I'm also super forgetful. So if I don't write it down right then, it'll just be gone. But it's really helpful and kind of therapeutic just to write everything down so that I always have something. I actually don't have that much time to design. I have to like cut out time because just the publishing and all that takes up like far more than you would think. Like all the social media and making my own website and getting the Kickstarter page and like just working with people. People are hard to work with, but Yes. Well, it takes time. And you have to, like, figure out how each person works well, like, that whole communication barrier. But, yeah, so I just have a bunch of ideas, like, and I get them, you know, from anything. Like, it could just come from playing a game. Like, maybe I'm playing a game and I'm like, oh, this is a cool mechanic. What if I paired this mechanic with this other mechanic and slapped on this theme because that's, like, the things that go together? You know? So I have all of these ideas just in a folder. And whenever I get, like, a spare, like, moment where I'm like, oh, I'm actually, like, I'm caught up on all the things I need to do, so I'm just gonna, you know, work through this idea. And sometimes I work through them, like, so Weird Draft Games is me and my husband, Nick, mm-hmm. also our cat, but he doesn't really participate in the design discussions. So
more of a box assistant.
Yeah, yeah. He sits in a lot of boxes. That's his main job. If you've ever looked at my Twitter, he does sit in a lot of boxes. There's proof of that. Yeah, me and my husband, we drive to work together. So one thing we do is maybe on the drive into work, I'll be like, hey, I was thinking about this mechanic and maybe paired with this theme. And we'll, like, just talk it through, and maybe he'll suggest a different mechanic or a slightly different story. And then, like, it's the story of it that really gets me to figure out what a game is. Like, all my games are really thematic in that aspect. So I'll just be thinking, like, you know, for Stellar Leap, it was like, what kind of things do you do in space? And that's really where that went, or that okay. idea came from. And, you know, as you're playing the game Stellar Leap, it's like all the things you would do in space. Like, I think it really makes sense in that aspect.
Now, go ahead, Casey. Were you going to say something?
So I was kind of curious, you know, looking over the games you've released and the ones you're about to come up on Kickstarter, it looks like all your games are pretty short in playtime. Is that like a conscious choice on your part, or has that just been how things have worked out to this point?
The first game, I wanted a game that was really tiny because, well, dealing with things like shipping and a lot of components, you know, I wanted the first one just to be like easy. Choose an sure. easy game. It's small. Stellar Leap actually got kind of away from me because I was like, I want to make a medium game. But it actually turned out to be like a lot of things because my imagination got away with me. I actually really, really like space. I'm super into it. You probably won't find that many people in this town like that.
Not here.
A joke. But yes. So I'm one of those people that like looks and sees the rockets and I'm like, whoa, I love that I see rockets every day. Right. So yeah, that one takes about an hour to play. And okay. after I play tested that meant that's an hour typically, but for learning games and for games where I'm like blind playtesting. Blind playtesting is when you put the game in front of somebody and are like, hey, pretend I am not the designer. Teach me how to play this game. So that whole thing is very painful because then you realize just how bad you are at writing rules. Like, I'm terrible. Like, but you do that repeatedly just to get the rules and make sure like the rules are really good because yeah. people are going to do that. They're going to get your game and you're not going to be there to explain how to play it. You need to do the blind play testing enough so that you know that a lot of people will just be able to understand the game. But going back to the question of like, was that a conscious choice? After blind playtesting and iterating on Stellar Leap so long, I was like, whoa, I need a shorter game. That's why Fire in the Library is a shorter one, because with Fire in the Library, you can playtest and then you could playtest again and again. You could playtest like, you know, 4 or 5 times in a night. But with Stellar Leap, sure. The most I ever playtested was twice in a row, like on the same, mm-hmm. Other than at cons. At cons, you just like, you playtest all day. Like that's like 12 or so hours of playtesting. But on a typical like work day, with an hour a game, you can only really playtest once or twice before you have to go do other things because you're an adult that, you know, lives in a house. I wanted to make that shorter because, like, just the iteration cycle, because you have to iterate so often. Like, you have to try out something, see if it works. Okay, it worked, but could it be better? And play it again and again and again. I think I'm going to go with shorter games. I think the whole sphere of 15 minutes to an hour is basically where we'll stay. I can't really imagine the amount of time it would take to iterate on like a 2 or 3 hour game. That would just be really, really intense. And I really like the iteration aspect of it, of try it out, you know, see what works, have a theory, change something, and retest. So if that can happen fast.
We have another podcast we do where we're playing through the board game Gloomhaven.
Yes.
Have you played any Gloomhaven yet?
I have.
Okay. So we have spoken many times on this podcast and that about just how insane that designer had to be with how many like options and situations and just the size and scope of everything. As you were talking about just how much work, you know, Stellar Leap was, I went back to that and am still just blown away by how insane that guy is.
Yeah, like a thing like Gloomhaven where you can choose to do whatever. Like, well, you can't choose whatever, but there's so many paths and it's so open-ended. I'm not sure if he actually like did go every single path, but didn't that game take like 6 years to develop?
That sounds reasonable to me. Like, there's just so much variance in every playthrough. Is it 2 players? Is it 4 players? Which classes are you doing? What cards did you choose for that class? Just everything.
Yeah. So
you can't really account for it all, but he seems to have done a really good job for accounting for most of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I never want to make a game like Gloomhaven. That's really like 6 years. That would be a long time and a long time to stay motivated on the same thing.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So I have 2 more questions for you, and then I'm going to stop asking questions, because if we're being honest, I love board games, but most of my enjoyment of board games has come through Casey, who kind of got me into board games. So I'm going to shut up and let him actually ask good questions. But my 2 other final questions I have for you. Number one is, you know, if you don't mind, kind of give us how your Kickstarter experience was, you know. And number 2 is, you know, I'm assuming from what you've said, you handle all of the back end of things, right? Getting everything actually physically created and shipped. And that just seems crazy to me. I just wonder if you could kind of briefly touch on how much of a nightmare that is.
Okay. I'll start with the whole manufacturing process. So with manufacturing, there are a few manufacturers in America, but they are super expensive. So expensive that if I use them, I would have to sell my games for like 4 or 5 times the cost I do now, and nobody would buy them because they'd be like, this is so expensive, I could get this in a similar game for much cheaper. So you have to work with Chinese manufacturers. And these Chinese manufacturers are, you know, in China, and English is not their first language. So there is that. They are also in a different time zone. So you have, unless you wake up in the middle of the night, which I do sometimes, and if I ever wake up in the middle of the night, I always check my email, because that is the best way to get 2 responses in from your manufacturer in the same day. It is, sometimes it just works out. In Super Hack Override, it was just cards. And so I just had to give them the art for the cards, tell them like the different weights of the cards and the finishes. Well, because cards, you know, they could be different thicknesses. They do like grams per meter, I believe. There's some customization, but it's just cards. It's pretty easy. For Stellar Leap, I tried a couple new things like meeples. I tried double layer player boards. I don't know if you've ever seen double layer player boards, but they're super cool and custom, and they also are so hard to get manufactured. I literally spent January trying to get them manufactured. That's all we really talked about was player boards every day. And just things changing and the millimeters changing. I did not enjoy that, and I might never do that again. But at least now I kind of know what I'm doing with that. Fulfillment is its own thing. It really depends on what you're doing. So Super Hack, another really cool thing about that is it was below this threshold where there's a certain weight. I'm not sure what it is offhand, like maybe half a pound or something, where if it's under that, it's super cheap to just ship from China to anywhere. I believe it costs $2 to ship from China to anywhere for that game from Send from China. So that was easy. I gave them a spreadsheet and told my manufacturer just to send the games there. So, and then it just went all over the world. Like, it went to Australia and Europe and Canada. Like, the games just got there and it was easy. For Stellar Leap, that it's going to be a little different. There's all these different ways you can do it. So Europe has a VAT tax, and people do not like to get taxed on the things that they're sent. VAT tax is basically an additional tax that you have to pay on things that are imported from outside the EU. So to get around that, you have to send it to a distributor in the EU, and then they send it on further. But you have to get the games there. There's also distributors in Australia and Canada and Mexico and a few other countries. Yes. So you have to make that choice. Like, do you want to somehow get the games to five different distributors to try to get them sent from in the country? What are the prices for all these? The weights in the boxes? Yes, it's a lot.
That sounds like a blast.
Oh, that all sounds super complicated and absolutely totally unrelated to what you actually want to be doing.
Right? Yes. Yeah, like, so one of the things about board games, I don't know if you've ever looked at board games, but they each have a box, or they probably have a box of some sort, but there's no standard. There's no standard at all. You can make a box whatever size you want. So just deciding what box you want is very, it's difficult because you have to like consider like what somebody sees. Like, if you make the box too small, they'll be like, that price tag doesn't make any sense, regardless of, you know, what's actually in the box. But you also have to think, okay, how am I going to ship this? Will this ship in one of those priority boxes? Because the priority are cheaper for very heavy things, because they're the same price, regardless of how heavy it is. So, yes, there's like all these things that like you never really thought about for game publishing. I'm not sure like if I had been told that, you know, it was going to be really hard and I'd have to learn like all these various skills in the beginning, if I would have continued. But in the beginning, it was like, you know, note cards, it's easy, go do it. So I've learned a lot in how actually complicated it is. But going back to your other question, you asked about Kickstarter.
Yes.
Kickstarter is also very difficult. You can't just launch a Kickstarter. You really have to start thinking about that like 6-9 months in advance. You have to pick the right date, the right month. Like, there's different days of the week. Like, don't launch on a Friday. That's dumb. Nobody's online then. Mondays and Tuesdays are really good for Kickstarter launches, probably because those people that have, you know, the 9-to-5s aren't actually working yet. They're just online surfing. Mm-hmm. So that's a good day. But there's a lot of prep and stuff that goes into it. For board games, you have to get reviews. Well, you don't have to, but if you don't have any reviews, people will look at your game and be like, eh, I don't know. Nobody says that they like it. Like, maybe their friends say that they like it. But if you get reviewers that people know, and those reviewers say that they like your game, you'll convince more people to back, sure, which is very important. You also have to get, like, all the social media presence, like the Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, whatever, because if you don't fund your Kickstarter in the first week, you probably won't fund. It's like a really weird situation, because if you think about the idea of Kickstarter, which is the fact that you want to help somebody bring their project to life, like, Kickstarter is not a store, okay? It's not, but people kind of see it as a store. Right. And they go and they see a Kickstarter and they're like, hey, this Kickstarter isn't funded. What's wrong with it? But they see another Kickstarter and they're like, whoa, that's funded. That's obviously a winner and I'm going to back that one. So you have to fund fast or you won't fund at all.
See that, Casey? It's all about funding people's dreams like a peanut butter spoon.
Oh, God, that sounds cool.
Thank you. He doesn't get it.
How long does it take for you to get that in?
What, a peanut butter spoon?
I think it'll be here this fall.
Peanut butter spoon on Kickstarter, and he's trying to convince me it's revolutionary.
Oh, is it made from peanut butter? Like a spoon made from peanut butter?
No, it is a brilliant design to perfectly scrape the peanut butter out of the jar and spread it. It's amazing.
Okay.
It's really just a spatula.
Spatula.
Whatever.
I mean, if you...
part of that man's dream, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did. You helped him.
Helped him in his unhealthy obsession with peanut butter.
Well, like, when you manufacture things in China, like, you can't just really manufacture one because that's really expensive. But if you get to manufacture, like, 1,000, you know, maybe he just really wanted, like, 5 of them. And he's like, you know, like, this is what I have to do to make it happen. Like, once you buy that mold, you know, you could just make so many.
Could be it. I think you might be onto something there.
Yeah. Casey, did you have anything that we haven't touched on?
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, what are some of your favorite board games and favorite mechanics? You know, I'm sure that kind of inspires you when you're working on these games.
So right now, my favorite thing to do when I choose board game is just to learn new games, because I actually had a really bad Kickstarter problem for a while where I just backed a lot of things. And now I have like this unplayed, it's not really a stack because it'd fall over if it was a stack. but yeah, I really like learning new games because whenever I learn a new game, I get all these ideas for my own games, and like I get things like, I'm like, oh yeah, this should go with this. And I also like get to see what other people do and try out my own rules with them. I don't always tell my friends this, but sometimes I'll play the same game over and over again, but I'll change the rules, but I won't tell them that the rules are different or not what the rule book is. I'll just teach it differently to see if I can improve a game. So there's that. If I had to choose some of my favorite games, I really like the game Dragoon. It's by Lay Waste Games, and in the game you're a dragon. And you basically do what you would think dragons do, like taking over towns, destroying towns, stealing gold from other dragons, those sorts of things. But it's really simple and easy, but, you know, there's like strategy to it, and I enjoy that. My favorite game right now is Pandemic Legacy Season 2. Have you heard of Legacy games? Well, you've heard of Gloomhaven. So
yeah. We've also played Seafall. I've played a little bit of Risk Legacy. I've not played the Pandemics yet, but I hear they're very good.
Yes. So I played Pandemic Season 1, and I really liked it. Like, it was good. We finished it. I think we won more than half of the games. You know, we were confident in it. But Season 2 is different. Like, Pandemic Season 1, like, that's Pandemic. You're playing Pandemic, and you know it. But Season 2 is different. It has some different mechanics, like things work differently. Instead of having the full map, you start off with like a very small subset of the globe, and then you explore and stuff like that. But it's also hard. Like, you know, like we have lost half the games at least. It is not like an easy game, but it's also partially our fault. I will admit that I probably tanked two of those games that we've played so far because it has the exploration aspect, kind of like Seafall. That was my favorite part of Seafall, was trying to explore and find the new things. I hated basically everything else about that game. but yeah, like you get to explore the world and rediscover like Chicago and Atlanta and places like that. So yeah, I probably like, instead of trying to deal with the whole sickness thing, I was like, I'm doing this. I'm going to Denver. Guys, I'm going to find it.
So. Nice. So would you ever, could you ever envision yourself making a legacy game at some point? Like if you could, like, obviously you don't want to, you know, we already talked about, you don't want to make something on the scope of like a Gloomhaven, but if you could make like it plays in half an hour to 45 minutes, but it has some cool legacy mechanics, is that something that you would consider doing at some point?
Yes, I actually have plans in either 2019 or 2020. I want to make Stellar Leap Legacies. So I have a couple campaigns kind of drawn out, or like the story of it. So the thing about legacy games I don't really like is the whole destruction aspect of it. I also don't like the fact that once you're done with a game, unless it's Charterstone, you can't play it again. Like it's done. It, you know, like after you play the 12 to 24 games of Pandemic, it just sits on your shelf now, and you're like, what do I do with that box? So with Stellar Leap Legacies, I want you to be able to take your base Stellar Leap game and take this other legacy portion of it, like a whole different game, and be able to play that. And I think it's going to have 10 different campaigns, and you'll be able to replay the different parts of the campaign. Like if you wanted to play like 1 through 3 and then play 3 again because you think you chose the wrong option, you can do that. So yeah, I do have plans for that. I do know it will be a big playtesting endeavor, but I want to make it easy. Like, well, easier than the whole like permanent destruction thing. I think that will streamline the process a little. You will like have things where they get kind of destroyed, where that means they're just put in the box and you can't have them for the game. And you can't have them until some other event happens and you get to take them back. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's exciting stuff. So as video game developers, we oftentimes play a lot of board games, and there are certainly, you know, lessons and inspirations we can take from playing those board games that translate over to the development of video games. I'm kind of curious if you've had any experiences of the opposite being true, where you're pulling ideas and inspirations from the video game side of things to work into your board games.
Not really. I did play a lot of board game or video games at one time in my life. I would play a lot of RPGs, and maybe the whole legacy game goes back to that, because I usually play the video games I would play would have a story, and I'd like the story. Like I played a lot of JRPGs, so that's what I really like about the whole like campaign legacy thing, is that it's a story and things matter, you know. So if I had to pull any inspiration, it'd be that.
Okay. All right. I've got one final question for you. This is the most important question. It's going to be asked all night. Can you please let everybody know the best way to buy your stuff?
Okay. So right now, you can go, if you want to get Super Hack Override, you can go to superhackoveride.com. For Stellar Leap, it's stellarleap.space/preorder, and you can pre-order the game. For Fire in the Library, I have fireinthelibrary.com, and that will get you to a mailing list right now. But during the Kickstarter, fireinthelibrary.com will forward to the Kickstarter, so you can go and back that directly.
So very cool. Kind of cheated and lied here. I have two more questions, or a question and a statement. There we go. So okay. I was browsing your Instagram, and I saw where Meeple Mountain had posted about your fire in the library that got to them. And I just wanted to say, absolutely love the box art. That is gorgeous.
Thank you. So the box art and all the illustrations for Fire in the Library are done by Beth Sobel, who is kind of a famous board game artist.
Okay.
Very cool.
And then the other question, and if you don't want to answer this, it's okay. I understand. But what is your day job? You know, you said this is kind of like your side passion and it's not your full-time gig yet. I was just kind of curious what you do.
Oh, I do software. Right now, I am a front-end UI engineer. I write Angular. Yeah. I'm on the computer all day.
Sure.
But, yeah.
We know how that is.
Yeah. Well, that... I've got to say, I was excited for this episode and for you as a guest, but this has already become my favorite episode we've done. This is really cool. You are an awesome guest to have.
Oh, cool. Thank you so much. I had a lot of fun.
But now we are going to geek out about some video games for a minute, if you don't mind.
Okay.
So, Casey.
Yeah.
I've been playing video games.
Oh, have you? It's not that surprising, actually.
It's not. And I'm going to tell you about the video games I've been playing.
Oh, please do.
So... there's this little game. I don't know if you've heard of it. No one ever talks about it in our office, but it's called Nier Automata.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
After, 6 months, a year now of no one shutting up about that at work, I finally bought it on the sale.
Okay. Did it change your life within the first hour of play? Because I feel like that would be my expectations going in at this point.
No, it didn't. Now, it is a platinum joint, so it has platinum game, you know, spectacle combat, and it feels tight and it feels good. That is, you know, immediately obvious. It's not as deep as some platinum fighters, and for me, that's good, because I just want to get in and smash crap, and this game lets me get in and smash crap without having to learn a bunch of combos, you know. But the world art is super interesting and bad. Like, just... It's you know, it would be what I would consider late PS3, early PS4 world art. It is not up to what the current standard is, but it doesn't distract. It doesn't really take away from the game, but it's definitely not where I would, you know, in a perfect world, it's not where I'd want it to be, right? But definitely interesting so far, and interesting things are happening. I'm hooked. I want to play it through and see what happens. I love post-apocalyptic type games and seeing how the world got in the state that it's in, and you know what the story is this time. And there's certainly a lot of that and a lot of intrigue with that going on. And it's got all the usual, you know, Japanese quirkiness that you would expect with this kind of title. So I am enjoying it. I think that you would probably be immediately bored with it. I don't know, man. It's just, it's super Japanese. I don't know.
Okay.
It has the story and the characters of what I would consider like a very straight line kind of JRPG, but with platinum combat. And maybe you would be into that. I'm not sure, but I don't know.
You're not selling me on it at all.
I am definitely enjoying it so far. It's been slow though. Like the initial few hours, like you start off kind of in high combat, and then there's like a two or three kind of lull hours of kind of learning the world and stuff, and now it's picking back up. But I don't know, I'm enjoying it. It hasn't changed my life yet, but you know, I also feel like I'm probably going into it more cynical than they did after hearing nothing but this game for the last year.
Sure. I recommend you beat me into the office on Monday, because if you don't, Matt will already hear how you think the game is slow, boring, and ugly. It'll be a real good day for everybody.
I don't want to miss the Matt tears. Now, I have been playing a more interesting game out of Japan called Puyo Puyo Tetris.
Puyo Puyo. I've heard some things about this game, but I don't really know much about it.
So we have a beta tester on one of our products by the name of Mason, who's been around for a million years. He's a local guy. Gotten some beers with him and stuff. He actually bought me this out of nowhere. I just came home and like had a notification. So that was pretty cool. Thank you, Mason. So it's Tetris, but it's... So the US and Japan are... Tetris is owned by two different companies. In the US and EU, it's owned by Ubisoft. And in Japan, it's someone else. I don't remember.
Ubi owns Tetris, huh?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And
I didn't know that.
Because of that, they've kind of gone different directions, you know? So this is the Tetris from here is what I consider like traditional. Just it is just Tetris. There's no weird power ups. There's no it's Tetris. Yeah. And then Puyo Puyo is kind of a Tetris-y, Dr. Mario-y hybrid deal. You've got like blobs that come in different shapes of twos and threes, I believe. And you rotate them around. You match the colors. When you get four of the same colors blob together, they vanish. And so you'll play the game, and it's all battle style. You're always playing against a person or AI. So I might be playing Tetris, and they might be playing Puyo Puyo, and I clear a certain number of lines, and it creates obstacles for them, and you're just going back and forth. Sometimes you're playing the other version. Sometimes you're playing where it switches between Tetris and Puyo Puyo every, like, minute while you play. But at the end of the day, it's just, it's kind of battle Tetris, right? You're just kind of playing against someone else and trying to be faster so that you fill up their board with crap before they can fill up your board with crap. But it's a lot of fun. And they actually put like a whole single player campaign in with voice acting and stories that somehow all the combat, you know, it devolves into Tetris. But there's a lot more effort that went into this than there needs to be. And you can take all your coins and stuff you earn in the campaign and buy different Tetris skins and just a whole lot of work for what could have been a throwaway title, you know?
Interesting. That's interesting.
Yeah. I also picked up Into the Breach, which I believe we talked about last week.
Yeah. We talked about it was coming out last week, but now it's out.
So. Well, I'll let you actually comment on Into the Breach, but I will say that since I bought it this afternoon, I've been playing it every free second that I could.
Yeah, it's quite good. Now, this was one of my most anticipated games of 2018, so I had to, of course, pick it up. And it is not disappointed yet. It is what you would expect from the makers of FTL. Right. It's roguelite, I guess. Like, it's got very short runs, right? There's like four islands, and you go to different zones, and you go till you win or you die, and then you almost start over. You get to send a pilot back if you mess up. So you build on things a little bit, and each run allows you to unlock things. So you can get resources, which you can use to buy new mechs and things like that. So, but the idea is you've got a team of three, mechs, and then you're fighting a bunch of bugs. It's basically mechs versus kaiju. And yeah, so it puts you on these little boards. And there's city. It's like little mini cities that are set up, and so there might be like a power station, and then a bunch of little city blocks, and then a bunch of open terrain. And so you put your guys down in the open terrain, and then the bugs burrow out from the ground, and then they're going to move, and then it's going to show you what their attack is for the turn, and now you have to go attacking them. And almost all attacks do a push of some sort. And so like your default guys, you've got a melee tank who deals two damage, which most things have between like one and five hit points. He'll do two damage and push things back a square, where and then you've got a guy who can shoot at range. He just shoots down a row or column until it hits something, and that deals a point of damage and pushes things back a square. And then you've got an artillery guy who can hit any point in his row or column after he's moved, and it deals damage to the thing it hits and pushes everything adjacent to it. And then like if you push things into other things, they both take damage. And so it's a lot of trying to kill the enemies and trying to prevent the enemies from destroying the buildings in the play space. But then you also have like objectives, like because if you lose buildings, you lose power. And then if you lose enough power, you lose the game. But like losing a single building is not going to devastate you. But then there might be like an objective of protect the train. You have to make the train get through alive, or protect the power relay. And if you do those things, you get bonuses, and you really want those bonuses to progress, because those bonuses will let you upgrade your mechs at the end of each island or whatnot. So it's really, really difficult, and it's really tactical. It feels really good. It plays quickly. Each little scenario is probably 5 or 10 minutes, and they're all, so you get one redo. You get the button that says, hey, let me just redo this turn I'm on. You can do that once per scenario, and it feels like you want it four times per scenario. Yeah. Because it's so hard. But each scenario is like really what you're trying to do is just survive five turns. After five turns, you've completed it and you move on, but it's very difficult. I've gotten to the end level once and failed it. But I just unlocked a whole new group of tanks, and they're all like flamethrower based and immune to fire. And so like they play completely differently from the other group. There's like eight other types you can unlock, and I think eventually you can mix and match them, and all pilots do different things. So there's a lot of depth to it for a game that plays pretty quickly. It's very crunchy in the tactics side of things, and it's a lot of fun.
Don't be put off by the visuals, by the way. For some reason, the screenshots on Steam just don't show well. When it's actually playing in full screen, it looks right. I don't know how to explain it better than that.
It does. It has some similarities to Slay the Spire to me, at least in the sense of I'm doing a run, and it, based on my choices, the run's going to play out a little bit differently, and I've got these interesting decisions to make along the way. I still lean a little more towards Slay the Spire just because I love that deck building mechanic and the comboing out you can do, and I can build my deck my way. I have a little more control over the build there, whereas you're more reacting to circumstances and Into the Breach. So I think I still prefer Slay the Spire a little bit, but yeah, I'm having a blast with Into the Breach. And yeah, it sounds like you are as well.
Steve, I think, nailed it pretty good last night when he said it's one of like the most cleverly disguised puzzle games.
Yeah, it's a great point. It's really what you're solving puzzles that are dynamic because they're changing from round to round, but
it's definitely good.
It's good. I really, especially it's, I think it's 15 bucks.
Price
so it's
15
worth,
bucks. Come
it's
on.
Worth every penny. Yeah.
So aside from Into the Breach, what else have you been playing?
I've played a little bit of Absolver. I think it was on sale on Steam a few weeks back, but all right, cool. Something just died in the background there.
That's all right.
I've been playing a little bit of Absolver. I think it was on sale recently on Steam, so I picked that up on the cheap. Absolver is this interesting martial arts game, and it's like a third-person action game. Everybody wears these cool masks and goes around and kind of has hand-to-hand combat. And so you've got – I've only played about 45 minutes, so I'll have more to report on this probably next week. But it's got a cool visual style to it, and the combat's actually pretty simple. Like X will chain things together. So the combat reminds me of Remember Me in a way.
Okay.
Where like Remember Me kind of had stances, and then you could chain combos together and kind of build out what those are. So like you have four different stances, and then there's multiple styles and schools to choose from. So you choose that style, and then you can get different stances. And then you can have a couple of different abilities within those stances. And so like I can just, but whatever stance I'm in, you can just hit X over and over again. And like you hit and then there's a glow and then that's when you want to hit again. And you can kind of do some chain stuff. But sometimes your abilities can end like it can end in a different stance. And then like you have an ability mapped to Y, which is like your special attack. And that always goes to a different stance. So I can X, 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 and then hit Y. And that's going to change to a different stance. And maybe that makes me kind of duck in the middle of the animation. So like your attack goes over me and then I kind of hit you up and then I can start hitting X again to combo out. There's a way to dodge. You can dodge attacks. You can feint attacks by doing an attack and then hitting the dodge button. I think it's the dodge button or the block button. Like immediately after you kind of feint the attack, there's a guard. There's a way to like each class has a different, like one can, it lets you dodge an attack in slow time briefly, or one allows you to, you take the hit, but then if you hit them back quickly, you regain all that damage you took and things like that. So it's this interesting little, you're kind of playing the opponent as much as anything else, right? Like waiting for openings and trying to outguess them. It plays a lot like a fighter, I guess. It's a little more actiony than that. It's been fun so far. It's a lot of single players, what I've been doing. But then like people are kind of mixed into those areas with you. So like last night I was running around and I'm needing to do some stuff for the single player quest to kind of progress. But then like there was a dude there who was another player, right? And there's ways you can like communicate with one another just through gestures and things like that. And you can ask, like, you can like say, hey, do you want to fight? And then they can say yes. and stuff, but I think you can just attack people too. So he was fighting a guy, and I went up and like helped him fight the guy. And then after that, we're kind of walking around. And then I guess he got bored. He walked up to me and like starts throwing punches at me. Okay, so now we're fighting. I ended up beating him. And really, what that means is like if you lose all your health, you have to you can respawn, and respawning. Usually you go back to like a spawn point that you hit like 20 seconds ago or something. It's not a big deal, right? There's these spaces you can go and rest and regain your health, and you just spawn back at one of those. It's not a big deal. But I beat him, and I actually have the ability to just revive him. Like, you know, I knocked you out. Now I can pick you back up and we can go on or whatever. He chose to not. I guess he thought I was just going to pick him up and start punching him again. I don't know. But like I was like, yeah, cool, whatever. But he just chose to kind of respawn wherever. I didn't see him again. But yeah, like through fighting people and doing these quests and stuff, I've already unlocked some new gear and these cool looking masks and things like that. So it's interesting. I have to keep, I don't know how popular it is right now, just because I know it's been out a while. So I don't, it's not going to be full of actual players. And for me, that's probably okay, but, it's been good. And there's more single player content than I was expecting. So.
Yeah, I from what I'm seeing, it's got around 4 hours of single player content. That's not bad. But at a $30 price point, you probably wouldn't want to buy into it unless you planned on doing multiplayer as well, right?
Peak concurrent players in the last 30 days is 204. So,
eesh.
Not a ton. That's down a little bit from their first month of release, where the peak concurrent was 18,921.
A little bit of a drop.
But, you know, it's fine. I'm happy with how things have been going so far. And yeah, I think a lope, like I think if it was just fighting people online, you know, the stakes aren't real high. And so it'd probably get a little boring, but like I'm enjoying the single player stuff and we'll see where it goes. I'll play it for a while for sure.
For sure. Well, Casey, do you want to wait until next week to give our humble opinions? We're kind of up against an hour here, and I actually haven't had much time to play all of these unknown games.
We can wait to give our we can wait for the deep dive on the humble opinions for next week. I will say though, little weaker of an offering than normal. In this group.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But maybe you know we might hop in and find a couple surprises. So yeah, we can wait a week and see how that plays out.
Yeah, and next month looking strong too, so we'll see. Definitely worth covering in depth later. But I guess that is going to do us for this week. Carla, are you still with us?
I am. I'm here.
We didn't put her to sleep. Yay. Well, hey, I just wanted to thank you again for coming on here. It was an absolute treat to have you on. Definitely going to try to make it to the next board game there at Sugar Bell, because I would love to meet you and, you know, play some new board games, of course.
When do you do the board game thing at Sugar Bell?
Okay, so Sugar Bell is the second and fourth Tuesday of the month. So I believe not this Tuesday, but next Tuesday, which is the 13th. So, yeah. Okay. Yeah, feel free to come by. It is 6 to 9 p.m. at Sugar Bell. All the board gamers know that there's a secret menu where you can get ice cream if you want it. And if you ask Andrew for it, he'll be like, it's February. What are you doing? Well, actually, he'll be like, it's March. But all the board gamers request ice cream every time. So, yes, that's what you have to do. But yeah, okay. It would be fantastic to meet you guys, because I've had a really fun time and I really enjoyed this.
All right. Well, once again, the website is weirdgiraffegames.com. And you can also click buy links for Super Hack and Stellar Leap and Stellar Leap Frontiers on that website. Carla, what was your Twitter again?
Weird Giraffes.
At Weird Giraffes. Okay. And of course, we are at GPub Radio, gamerpublicradio.com. And we'll be back at you Wednesday with a wild card Wednesday. And hopefully we'll actually have a topic this time. See you guys then.
Gamer Public Radio.